by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are. Rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a really good program for you this evening. We're going to start off with Greg Reese, and he's got some really good pronouncements to make. And then we're going to follow that with David Icke, an interview that Alex had with David Icke, and he gives us a really good overall view of what to do and how to stop this conspiracy that's ongoing. And this COVID-19 is a pandemic, all right. And he stands up and tells us what we must do, and then we'll move on. There's all kinds of problems. There's over 10,000 coming across the bridge there in Del Rio underneath one of the bridges of Haitians and other, you know, illegal immigrants. And we've just got a plethora of problems. And then we've got the Hillary, you know, is getting caught up in this husband indictment. And John Solomon and Greg Jarrett will testify on Hannity's and one of his recent programs about that. But here we go first with Greg Reese.
In February of 2020, a state-run Chinese research institute seeks a patent on the use of remdesivir to treat coronavirus based on the results of a single patient. In April of 2020, Anthony Fauci cited a study which he said proved remdesivir could block coronavirus. He claimed the study showed that remdesivir was safe and efficacious in the use against the Ebola virus in 2018 and 2019. But this was a lie. If one were to actually look at the study, which was testing four different drugs against Ebola virus, they will find that the safety board pulled remdesivir out of the trial 6 months early because over 50% of patients who received it died. Fauci quoted a second study in support of his mandating the use of remdesivir, a study conducted by the makers of remdesivir, wherein 53 patients with COVID were administered the drug for 10 days. 23% of them suffered from multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, septic shock, and acute kidney injury. 8% of them had to be taken off the drug after only 5 days because it was killing them. After the CCP and Fauci recommended the use of remdesivir, the U.S. secured the world supply and began treating Americans with it. COVID patients immediately began suffering kidney failure, which was then blamed on COVID, even though studies by the manufacturer show that remdesivir causes it in 23% after only a few days. When the kidneys fail, the lungs fill with liquid, which is how thousands have died in the hospitals, being put on ventilators, and it's all being blamed on COVID. But if we read the fine print, we see that this is to be expected with remdesivir. And this has happened before. YouTuber Jamie Deluxe recently compared two patients from the past, Freddie Mercury and Magic Johnson, both diagnosed with HIV around the same time, both advised by none other than Anthony Fauci to take the drug AZT. As Freddie Mercury took heavy doses of the deadly drug, his health quickly deteriorated until he died. Magic Johnson started taking it, but it made him feel worse, and so he stopped. The media storm surrounding Magic Johnson's condition immediately disappeared after he stopped taking AZT and never mentioned it. And Magic Johnson is alive and healthy today. This is how they kill us. They sow fear with mainstream media pop culture lies and kill us with deadly drugs in the hospital. Just like the so-called vaccines, which the FDA was full aware of how deadly they were back in October of last year, where they published all the side effects we are seeing today in the vaccinated, while failing to include them in the vaccine inserts. For copies of these documents and for healthy treatment, you can go to Dr. Artis' website. For Infowars.com, this is Greg Reese.
Many of these recommended medications have been dangerous. And so, and they were outlawing, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine when, you know, from many hospitals, many doctors are not clued in yet on what to do. And we're going to have some suggestions by Dr. Jane Ruby after these first introductory interviews here. And she's going to be telling our listening audience what not to do. And she's not recommending to get into these hospitals because they're becoming fortresses. In fact, I had a good friend, and his wife described the hospital she was dealing with in those very words. But this is Dr. Dr. Kirsch coming up with a discussion with FDA. And he's talking about what is really going on. And then we're going to follow that up with Dr. Jane Ruby, what she's beginning saying about this whole COVID thing. But first, we're going to do this, Dr. Reese, and then we're going to follow that up with David Icke. And then we'll go to Dr. Jane Ruby after that. Okay, here we go next with Dr. Kirsch, what he had to say.
Hi, I'm Steve Kirsch. I'm executive director of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund. I have no conflicts. Advance to slide number 4 with the elephant. I'm going to focus my remarks today on the elephant in the room that nobody likes to talk about, that the vaccines kill more people than they save. Today, we focus almost exclusively on COVID death saves and vaccine efficacy because we were led to believe that vaccines are perfectly safe. But this is simply not true. For example, there were 4 times as many heart attacks in the treatment group in the Pfizer 6-month trial report. That wasn't bad luck. Theirs shows heart attacks happen 71 times more often following these vaccines compared to any other vaccine. In all, 20 people died who got the drug, 14 died who got the placebo. Few people noticed that. If the net all-cause mortality from the vaccines is negative, vaccines, boosters, and mandates are all nonsensical. This is the case today. Death rates. Slide number 7 advance to the number 7 in the lower part. This shows that the all-cause death light rate in 3 cases. Only the VAERS numbers are statistically significant, but the other numbers are troubling. Even if the vaccines had 100% protection, it still means we killed 2 people to save 1 life. 4 experts did analyses using completely different non-U.S. data sources, and all of them came up with approximately the same number of excess vaccine-related deaths, about 411 deaths per million doses. That translates into 150,000 people have died. Next slide would be slide number 11, the nursing home. Now, the real numbers confirm that we kill more than we save. And I would love everyone to look at the Israel Ministry of Health data on the 90-plus-year-olds where we went from a 94.4% vaccinated group to 82.9% vaccinated in the last 4 months. In the most optimistic scenario, it means that 50% of the vaccinated people died and 0% of unvaccinated people died. Unless you can explain that to the American public, you cannot approve the boosters.
It's getting to be more difficult now because the data is coming out, and this data from Israel is really, really troubling and scary. And this is what Dr. Jane Ruby had to say yesterday about these hospitals. And then we'll go to that David Icke overview. But first, Dr. Jane Ruby, and this is getting scary out there. People need to take heed of some of these really good alternative doctors with alternative solutions. Here we go with Dr. Jane Ruby.
Day after day, alone on a hill,
the man with the foolish grin.
Well, we've got a whole new hospital system in the United States, it seems. We've got a whole protocol. They're all walking in lockstep. Anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. I'm Dr. Jane Ruby. I'm guest hosting in for Alex today and always thrilled to be here. Look, if you have any kind of flu symptoms or you have a positive COVID test external to a hospital and you go there because your symptoms are advancing, you're going to find a similar protocol being implemented, and it's very dangerous. You will be tested. You will be probably found to be positive in the hospital, whether you are or not. You'll be sequestered. Your family will be out. They will be literally out in the parking lot. You will be forced on remdesivir, which is an experimental drug that is in now real-world evidence, is showing damage to kidneys and lethal, fatal renal failure. And then you will be asked to be sedated, or you will be sedated, and you'll put on a mechanical vent, intubated forcefully, and on a mechanical ventilator, which will probably finish you off since you're developing pneumonia, and that's not the protocol for that. Why, where is this coming from? Where is the Joint Commission? There's something I want you to be aware of. It's called the Joint Commission. You can go to their website, jointcommission.org. It's very important. You, as a U.S. citizen, can file a complaint against a hospital for safety reasons, and you should. Okay, because I don't know if you all heard the, or someone on the show talked about Veronica Wolsky's story. She was a conservative activist in Chicago, got into that situation. Out in the parking lot, to my understanding, was her power of attorney, her medical doctor licensed, who was willing to take over her care. She was alert and still letting them know that she wanted to leave. She would sign any paperwork to do that. And there was an ambulance waiting to take her, fully supporting her medically. And she was denied. And then she died in the night after they forced her on a ventilator. I hope the lawsuits never end against this hospital. I believe it was called Amida Resurrection in Chicago. But that's not a singled out hospital. I get literally 50 or 60 messages. It's really getting frightening. On my Proton Mail, Dr. Jane Ruby at Proton Mail, every day, saying, please, Dr. Ruby, help me. Please, my relative, my husband, my son is in a hospital. They won't release him. They want him to go on a ventilator, or he's already on a ventilator. This has got to stop. It's to me, it's premeditated murder, and everyone involved in that hospital who doesn't come out or come forward or stop it in some way is a conspirator to murder. I just can't. It's just very dangerous. Be very careful. You don't want to go to hospital for any particular thing right now.
Well, that's what Dr. Jane Ruby said. And I think that's probably good advice. You'll have to consult with your family doctor. But if your family doctor is not open or would not even use some of these other alternative, at least at the beginning of your ailment, at least try some of these alternatives at the very beginning. And if they don't work, then go back to some of the traditional treatments. But some of the stuff that Fauci and them are putting out is deadly. And we're getting that feedback all the time. And so many people out there are of the opinion that this thing was planned out. And this was a way to create a health dictatorship and a close down of the world and a transitioning us into a one-world communist state, and to destroy these national boundaries and just create an amalgamation of individuals of all kinds, and to take us down and put us in servitude, like a new serfdom, a new Middle Ages. This has been written about by many people. But here is next coming up is David Icke being interviewed by Alex, and they have he really has some important things to say. Here we go with David Icke next.
2030 is a date, a year that comes up and seems to bring together all these different subjects. if you look, for instance, at the last time they said the world has so many years to save the planet, then you'll hit 2030. Look at Kurzweil. He wants the process of the human brain being connected to AI by 2030, for that to be underway by 2030. Then you look at Agenda 2030, of course, in the UN, which is basically the Great Reset in one form. So 2030 is a year where they want this to be really moving to a point where they believe it will be unstoppable. And that's why we have the period between now and then to bring an end to this. And that means that we have to put aside everything else and make this the absolute priority of our lives.
And so you're going to tell us what's coming next. I mean, I know you don't want to scare people. We're here to empower folks. But they need to know there's a fire lit under their ass. I think people get that now, that we weren't making it up 30 years ago when you were trailblazing. And quite frankly, I'd read your books and think, well, this is all true, but this stuff I don't know about. This sounds wild. It's maybe 70% of what was in your books was documented, but people didn't know about it. 30% was your analysis. And like of that 30% now, 28% of it's happened. So people better listen and better understand. We're not up here saying all this to shock people. When you talk about subliminals, people can type in subliminals in TV. They admit it's everywhere. Kurz commercials, everything. Back in the 1950s, they found, they just flashed a shot of a Marilyn Monroe-style body of a woman with Coca-Cola ad behind it saying, you want Coke and popcorn. It massively increased people getting up and going and getting Coke and popcorn because the naked eye couldn't see it, but for just a few frames they saw it, the subconscious saw it. So everything you're talking about is actually on record. From 70% amount, you know, on the record to 30% opinion to now 98% is all admitted. Now it's 2% of your opinion. Will that come true? I think it will, unfortunately. I hope you're right about us stopping them in the next 5 years or so, because if you look at Agenda 2030, as you know, we've now completed Agenda 21. They want to start massive depopulation by 2030. That's their goal. That's why Biden and AOC and all of them say the world ends in 2030. They mean the world as we know it. So David, tell people the real horror of what's coming if they don't take action.
Yeah, well, 2030 is a number, a date, a year that comes up and seems to bring together all these different subjects. If you look, for instance, at the last time they said the world has so many years to save the planet, then you'll hit 2030. Look at Kurzweil. He wants the process of the human brain being connected to AI by 2030, for that to be underway by 2030. Then you look at Agenda 2030, of course, in the UN, which is basically the Great Reset in one form. So 2030 is a year where they want this to be really moving to a point where they believe it will be unstoppable. And that's why we have the period between now and then to bring an end to this. And that means that we have to put aside everything else and make this the absolute priority of our lives. If people say, oh, my kids are more important, well, actually, your kids are more important, but they are the targets of this whole conspiracy. So by putting standing up to this and refusing to acquiesce with this first, you're putting your kids first. You're putting your family first. You're putting the future first, putting everything first. So, you know, we've got to move in far greater numbers. It's happening, but far greater numbers from seeing it to ceasing to cooperate with it. You don't have to scream no. You just have to mean it. No, I'm not doing it. No, not doing it. And let's realize that whatever they want to throw at us in terms of intimidation, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that if you don't do what we say. What they want us to do is to take these fake life-ending, life-changing vaccines. is far, far worse and more sinister than anything else they can come up with in terms of intimidation. Well, you won't be able to travel. I won't travel then. You won't be able to do this. Well, do it then. Do that. Don't do that either. I'm just not doing it. Whatever you try to intimidate me with, I'm not having this jab because I know that's the end when I do. And it's vital now that people put this first and put not cooperating with it first, because if enough people do that, the game is up.
David, I totally agree. But you know, 30 years ago, you said what they were going to do and it came true. Tell us what it'll look like if we don't resist, because I think that's extremely important. Let me add one more little thing I want you to comment on. We should say no to the injection, and it's causing major health problems and causing cancer, 20 times increase at the diagnostic clinics in the U.S. alone. I mean, this is Armageddon-level stuff. But one of the biggest groups now joining us and waking up is people that took the shots and got sick, or took the shots and are now told you got to take 3, 4, 5 shots as they're now rolling out. So how do we reach out to those that have already been poisoned, or is it too late for them, is what you're saying?
Well, it's hard to call whether it's too late for anybody, but it's going to be too late for some, that's for sure. But it's already been too late for many. I mean, you know, you look at the VAERS reporting system and the yellow card system in Britain, and you have to multiply that by anything between 100 and 10 to find the real figures. I mean, the Harvard study said the VAERS system only counts about 1% or less of vaccine adverse reactions and deaths, et cetera. And the yellow card system is something similar. And they admit no more than 10% do. So when they have, as we have in this country, well in excess, getting on towards 2 million adverse reactions reported to the yellow card system and well in excess of 1,000 deaths, you've got to multiply them by at least 10 and actually probably a very lot more. So it's already showing itself, and unfortunately it's too late for those people. But the point is that the more this moves on, the more people are going to see it because it becomes undeniable. And what you're talking about is very interesting and very important. I've noticed when we do these marches in London that more and more people who've had the fake vax, either 2 or 1, are now coming on the marches because of this process. You see, this is how it's worked, Alex. You tell them a lie to get to this stage, and then they realize it's a lie. But then you tell them another lie to get them to this stage, and they realize it's a lie, but and it goes on. So they say, get tested, everyone get tested, and then we'll go back to normal. But the more you test with a test not testing for it, the more fake cases, the more justification not to go back to normal. And then they say, wear a mask, and we go back to normal, and you don't. Then they say, and this is the big one, get these fake vaccines, and you go back to normal. Get 2, and you're fully vaxxed, and then you'll be fine, and everything will be okay. And then suddenly the people have done that, and they realize, well, actually, it's not fine, because I can't do things that I normally would, even though I've been vax. And now they're saying, look what's happening in Israel and other countries. They're saying, well, actually, to be fully vaxxed is not 2 anymore, it's 3. And in Israel, they're saying, actually, there's a 4th on the way. And so more and more people who've gone this far down that road of just believing what they're told are saying, hold on a minute. What do you mean? I've got to have a 3rd to get me vaccine passport, or a 4th. So more and more people are going to be moving over, and you know, everyone is welcome. You know, it doesn't matter what's gone before. Everyone is welcome, because we're in this together as a human race, all colors, creeds, cultures, the entirety of the human race, one human race, one goal, one heart, and one.
I totally agree. I have never felt more unified behind it. I've never loved humanity more. I've never seen through it all more than I am now. And I think everybody who's already somewhat awake is getting more awake as evil comes into the world and makes its move. Newtonian physics, I think, is just one measurement of it. But clearly good rises at the same time, and I think rises faster, David. What do you think?
Well, yeah. Well, what we call good, positivity, love, is far more powerful than hatred and psychopathy. And the only way that this cult, I mean, this is one thing, Alex, that people need to appreciate. This cult is not all powerful. That's a bloody myth. It's not all powerful. The only way that it's got to this position of apparent power is by hoarding knowledge, not least the knowledge of how reality works, how we interact with it, and how our perceptions become our experienced reality, which I explain in the book.
David, I've been here 2 hours. Do 5 more minutes because I want you to finish this thought and talk about the book. And I want to just plug the book here at the end because some stations are going to leave us. Perceptions of a Renegade Mind, David Icke, DavidIcke.com, separately.
That's what David Icke had to say, and he's very, very profound in his thinking. But just recently, we've had some other things come up. The Sussman indictment has raised the specter of Hillary involved in all of this conspiracy to frame President Trump even before he was president. And so we have an excellent interview that Hannity did with both Greg Jarrett and John Solomon concerning the Sussman thing. And this is creating new controversy. It's actually reiterating stuff that was broadcast several years ago when President Trump was still in office. But here we go on next with Hannity interviewing Greg Jarrett and John Solomon. It was real interesting. These people are upright reporters. Here we go next.
We have a significant development tonight. It is significant. As Steele dossier linked, Democratic lawyer Michael Sussman has now been indicted by a grand jury in the special counsel probe, accused of making false statements to the FBI. And with the latest Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett, along with Just the News founder, investigative reporter John Solomon. Greg, as you read the indictment, it was very revealing, as Jonathan Turley said, for a lot of reasons. I'll let you explain it.
Well, it was one of the many lies that was conjured up by the dirty tricks department of the Hillary Clinton campaign. At the helm of that, of course, was Hillary Clinton herself. Sussman, the defendant in this indictment, is one of the minions that was spreading the lie at the behest of Hillary Clinton, and now he's been caught allegedly lying about his lie. Now, the person who should really be indicted is Hillary Clinton. One of the things I discovered as I poured through thousands of pages of documents as I was writing my book, Witch Hunt, I kept asking myself, who invented the lie, the Russia hoax? What was the genesis? I discovered it was Hillary Clinton. It was drawn from the insidious depths of her fictive imagination. It was magnificently devious and classic Hillary Clinton, meant to distract from her own email scandal and to frame her opponent in the presidential campaign with crimes he didn't commit. Guess who caught on to it? The CIA in the summer of 2016, before the election, they discovered that Hillary Clinton had invented this lie, financed the lie, and through her minions like Sussman, disseminating the lie. So alarmed was CIA Director Brennan, he rushed to the White House to tell Obama about it, who buried it. In order to cover his butt, Brennan then sent a criminal referral against Hillary to James Comey. What did he do with it? He buried it. And instead, he proceeded to use the lie as a pretext to spy on the Trump campaign and to pursue an investigation of Donald Trump to ruin his forthcoming presidency. And to some extent, he succeeded. So the people who should be indicted are people like Hillary Clinton, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, and Peter Strzok, and I got a long list of others.
Let me get your take on this, John Solomon. What basically I take out of this is the whole thing was made up from the beginning, as Greg said, to distract from Hillary's email server problems. So they make up this whole Trump-Russia collusion. They disseminate it, and they're even using campaign dollars to do it, and then they have the willing accomplices in the deep state to help pull it off. Let's get your interpretation.
100% right. In the book that I wrote a year ago, we talked about this poll that Hillary Clinton did in the summer of 2015 that showed her and Bill Clinton's dealings in Russia, the money that was changing hands and the closeness to the Putin regime was the single greatest liability to her being elected president. And they set out to neutralize that by making the eventual Republican nominee Donald Trump looked like he was in bed in Russia. Not, and they created a three-legged stool. The first leg of the stool was Christopher Steele and his bogus dossier. The second leg of the stool we saw fully exposed today, a lawyer named Michael Sussman going in and creating a computer piece of garbage, basically suggesting that there were secret communications going on, and then giving it to the FBI after he was warned, after he and his team was warned that this was a red herring, meaning it wasn't real. He gives it to the FBI, and then he lies to the FBI saying, I'm giving this to you because I'm a good citizen. I don't have any client. He was being paid by Hillary Clinton for every moment he worked on that, including the day he met with the FBI. That's the second leg of the stool. The third leg of the stool are the deep staters, the Bruce Orrs and the people at the State Department and others that joined in Hillary Clinton in flooding the FBI with all this Russian disinformation, this collusion allegation to make it look real on the final days of the election.
Will anyone be held accountable for the premeditated fraud on a FISA court, even though they were warned that this was a dirty Russian dossier repeatedly? And they did, you know, they would, they affirm and attest that it's true to the best of their knowledge. They found out it wasn't. They used it anyway. Are they going to be held accountable, John? Last question.
Yes, absolutely. There's more grand jury activity, more criminal investigation going on. It's a year too late, but it is going on. And the focus on that are the FBI people who worked on the FISA court and submitted those knowingly false documents. I think you might see some more indictments there. And then finally, a report where the whole story is told from beginning to end.
I just hope all of this does come out. Perhaps the deep state behind the scenes has concluded that President Biden is doing a disservice for the Democratic Party. And that could very well be behind the scenes, you know, you could say maneuvering. But coming up is Mark Levine, interviewed by Hannity. And boy, he's a blockbuster in putting out some of his views. But here we go with Mark Levine on Hannity. So they're saying that this is all going to come out, and I just hope it does, but I'm not guaranteed of that. It could be that behind the scenes, the deep state is finally waking up to the realization that Biden is doing a disservice for the Democratic Party, and this could be a beginning of moving against him and moving him out and moving Kamala Harris in. So this is just something that's sort of suspicious. But and we're going to end up with some other interviews here and some other clips. But that could very well be. But coming up is Mark Levine, interviewed by Hannity just recently in the last day or two. And here's what he had to say about several of these issues and topics.
I'll open it up to you. We got General Milley. We've got Afghanistan. We've got a border disaster. We're now begging OPEC for energy. We've got inflation. We got fuel prices up $1.50 a gallon. Where would you like to start?
First of all, none of this has to happen. Thank you, Sean, for having me. And I would encourage people who have American Marxism, go to Chapter 7, please, and act on it. That said, let me hit some of this. General Milley, they're going to have a hearing, everybody says, on September 28th, and Milley will be present. What's going to happen is, past his prologues, the Democrat Party will do everything they can to run interference for Milley. They're going to run interference for Milley because they're running interference for Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi has a key role in this. There's a telephone conversation between Nancy Pelosi and General Milley in which she, who is absolutely nuts, accuses the president at the time, Trump, of being crazy, talks about nuclear weapons, and Milley says he agrees with it completely. He goes back to the Pentagon, he calls in his subordinates, and they talk about what is our process, and let's go over it for using nuclear weapons. President Trump never even hinted ever about using nuclear weapons. There's no basis for this whatsoever, and I might add in a footnote, I don't know who's more loathsome, Milley, who is loathsome, or Woodward and Costa. If they're all standing by this, and it's big-time news, and it is, they sat on it for months and months when the American people should have known, when Congress should have known, and, of course, the people in the military should have known that we have a rogue general. If they're standing by it, it's appalling what the Washington Post has done with this country, just as bad as Milley. Now, this over-the-horizon stuff, they think it's the Wizard of Oz over the rainbow. Over-horizon, that's a phrase that has absolutely no meaning.
We have no intelligence whatsoever left in Afghanistan, and you point out night after night, hostages. His whole country's been held hostage by Biden for 8 months. Let me tell you what's going to happen to most of those American citizens. They're not coming back. Let me tell you what's going to happen to most of those American green card holders. They're not coming back. Let me tell you what's going to happen to those 80,000 or so SIV visa holders, patriots who served with us. They're not coming back, and they hope you forget it. And so now they go to war on Florida and Texas and red southern states that Biden has no hope of winning. What are they doing now? Biden is holding back monoclonal antibodies from Florida and southern states that are running to any of these states because the federal government buys them from the producer and then hands them out to the states. He's pulled them back from Republican states and Republican governors. Now, think about that. No president in American history has ever done that either. Look at the southern border. 11,000 Haitians trying to get in. Now, first of all, they had to come from an island nation to come to the United States. Notice when it came to the Cubans, they were clear. You come across those waters, we're sending you back. What about the Haitians? They're here. Why? Because they hope they'll vote Democrat. America, we have an invasion. I don't care what the New York Times or the Washington Post has to say about that or anything else. We have an invasion. Millions of people are coming into this country illegally over a period of time. If he's president for 4 years, could be upwards of 10 million people. Meanwhile, his party in Congress is trying to hand out amnesty like lollipops as fast as possible. Our constitutional constructs under attack, our traditions and adherence to laws under attack, comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, is under attack because we have this doofus as president of the United States. But I should add, he was a doofus when he had his wits. He's just a disaster. A couple other quick things I want to talk about, too. Pay attention to September 27. September 27 is when the Democrats are back in town, and they want to ram through the most disastrous omnibus bill in American history, certainly one of them, which will change our constitutional system, which will change our voting system, which will change our immigration system, which massively expands the welfare state, which is going to break the back of our children and grandchildren and generations yet born. This guy, Biden, has lit a match to this society. And when he goes up there and gives these speeches where he lies through his teeth, where he uses Marxist-like propaganda, he turns one people against another people, where he talks about the rich versus the poor and goes on and on and on, he is a destructive person. That's what he is. And the people around him, they talk about diversity. There may be physical diversity. There may be genitalia diversity. There may be color diversity, religious diversity, but when it comes to ideology, there is no diversity. And finally, Sean, the media. You bastards in the media are so corrupt. It is you who have allowed this to happen. It is you. The Washington Post sits on a story like this Milley story for months. The Washington Post and other media pushed the phony Russia collusion story for years. Now somebody's finally been indicted. The Washington Post, which undermines facts and the New York Times and so forth and so on. They have a horrific history. They failed to cover the Holocaust. The case of the New York Times, they backed Stalin. They had a bureau chief that was sympathetic to the Third Reich. In 1959, they backed Castro, and that's the paper of record. The media in this country is contributing to its destruction and turning it inside out. This is a battle between liberty and tyranny. There is simply no question about it. That's it.
Mark Levine is a stand-up person. He tells it like it is. And there's no two ways about him. He tells you exactly where he's coming from and tells it like it is. Coming up next, we're going to end the program with Milton Keynes. He's a UK funeral director, owns his own business. And he tells us that don't believe what's going on. He said it's all fake or whatever, he can bet subscribe it. But we're going to finish the program with that, and then we'll wish you good luck on the future, and thank you very much for listening. But we're just going to close it out right to the end music from here. But we'll have a click-off in here where you can listen to the full interview with Milton Keynes. So here we go with Milton Keynes, UK funeral director. We need to know what's happening overseas because it might visit us pretty soon. Thank you.
If you don't help yourself, nobody else will, I can tell you. And you'll be rounded up into these camps. There'll be an outbreak in these camps of COVID, and you'll see people carted out. Some people will buckle, and they'll accept a lethal injection just to get back released to be on home lockdown. The time is now to do something, because I can tell you as a funeral director, it'll be no good us reflecting in 12 months' time from inside a prison cell, wishing that you'd have done something, wishing you'd have saved your children. The time to do it is now. And speak out. If you're in the industry, you need to speak out. If you're in the NHS and you're about to lose your job because you're refusing the vaccines that you know is doing this damage, for Christ's sake, speak out. You owe it to people. Very interestingly, the Hippocratic Oath, or the hypocritical oath, as I call it now, in hospitals, as was revised in 2001 to omit the wording, we will do no harm. You know, so does that give people license now to harm people? I've spoken to nurses who have been called into rooms and been told by senior medical management teams to deliver a dose of 60 milligrams of midazolam, a fatal dose, to patients that are not even dying. Patients labelled with COVID in a fundamentally flawed process. The PCR test should never be done on more than 10 cycles. The guy who invented that test, those were his words. And incidentally, he's dead now. You know, he died a short while ago. They're doing 45 cycles. So the way it works is if you're a cancer patient, you go in hospital for palliative care. And basically, palliative care, or the Liverpool pathway, means you're starved to death with a morphine driver in you. And don't get me wrong, for some people that may be the most merciful end, and I can respect that, but the key element here is consent. And these people are having DNRs placed on them, and they're being coerced and blackmailed into signing these Liverpool pathways for people that are not even dying. Do you know, people that were designated as COVID, with a test that is nondescript, it just doesn't, it's not illogical. There's no science behind it. The guy who invented it has said that, and yet they're driving forward and killing people. What more do you need to know, guys? Now they're targeting your children. What are you going to do? Are you going to allow it? Are you just going to roll over? Are you going to get led off to a camp? You know, there are enough good people out there to really make a difference, but only if you work collectively to do that. And I suspect, as I've said before, the only people that will save you guys is you. You know, you can't. I've listened to what your government said over there. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's barbaric. It's almost very, there are echoes of Nazi Germany in there, you know, and then some. You're being blackmailed, coerced, forced, every crime under the sun, every crime threatened with your job. You can't see your mum, you can't travel, you can't work, you can't go out, you can't go food shopping, you can't go to a kid's play park. These are fundamental human rights that you've lost. And it can only ever end one way, with a van pulling up outside your house and leading you off to an internment centre. And that is where it will end. And it will end the same way here. And I would suggest that Australia is probably the test bed, because although it's a big place, there is nowhere to go. So I would urge you guys to band together and to collectively take action. Take action. I'm not encouraging crime, but you are victims of crime. So, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? All I can tell you is my experience as a funeral director, and I've watched and dressed well over 100 COVID cases now. Many of them still warm. You're being lied to. You're being lied to.
There again, Milton Keynes says it like it is. Coming up next is Tom Fenton on his weekend review, his weekly review of Judicial Watch. And he says some very, very important things. We're going to end about the last 12, 13 minutes with Tom Fenton. And you can go into Judicial Watch and pick up his pronouncements and his whole overview for the week. But here we go with Tom Fenton.
Sussman is not a small fish. Sussman is a big fish in a small pond of co-conspirators who were targeting Trump, including Hillary Clinton, I would allege. Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton here with our weekly update here on social media. Thanks for joining us this week. A lot to talk about. A big new indictment from John Durham, a positive development for the rule of law. I'll talk about that. plus new FDA documents that will shock the conscience of any normal person, showing the organ and fetal head trafficking of unborn aborted human beings. Incredible, terrible stuff. Plus Judicial Watch fighting for the full truth about the killing of Ashley Babbitt. Delays, we're battling delays in federal court. Plus we were in Delaware Supreme Court for Biden records, a big battle there. So I'll talk to you about that as well. First up, though, is something that Judicial Watch is taking the lead on, which is exposing the truth behind the worst government corruption scandal in American history, in terms of political criminality. That is the targeting of candidate Trump and then President Trump and people around him. And John Durham, the special counsel who became, he was essentially, just a regular prosecutor looking at this. And just before he left, Attorney General Barr made him a special counsel. He finally indicted someone else. And this someone else is a big deal. It's Michael Sussman, who is a lawyer or had been a lawyer for the law firm of Perkins Coie, and that's the firm behind the dossier. And it's also the go-to firm for the Democratic Party. So Sussman was the lawyer for Hillary Clinton's campaign, the lawyer for the Democratic Party, namely the Democratic National Committee. And he had a special meeting shortly before the election in 2016 with the general counsel of the FBI, General Counsel Baker, who in which they discussed targeting Trump. And specifically, he alleged in this meeting and gave him documentation, according to the indictment that was just issued this week by the grand jury, or returned this week by the grand jury at the request of Durham. He was behind the idea that this was Russian bank had communications, improper communications or relationships, or there was some sort of internet communication that raised questions with the Trump organization. And you may recall the media ran with that. Alpha Bank, Russian bank, and the Trump people have been connected. Well, he was indicted. Sussman was not for lying about that specifically, but for lying about the reason he was there, because allegedly he told Baker he was there just as a citizen, just conveying information he thought the FBI should pursue. He withheld from Baker, according to the indictment, that he was there on behalf of Hillary Clinton, the Clinton campaign, Democratic National Committee, etc. So he lied about the reason and the purpose of the meeting. And when you lie to the FBI, it's a crime. That's why, you know, don't talk to the FBI unless you have a lawyer present and the lawyer advises you completely of what the your rights are even then. So he's meeting with this lawyer. First of all, the meeting should, let me be clear here. Let's take a step back. This meeting should never have taken place. You know, Sussman is a DOJ. He had used to work at the Department of Justice, so he knows everybody, and he gets to get into meetings like this to shop garbage like this. And what the indictment, and I encourage you to review the indictment. It's available widely online and read it yourself. And what's interesting about it is that there's, you know, the one charge really about making a false, making a false statement, but there are two dozen pages describing an illicit conspiracy targeting Donald Trump. They all knew that there was no there when it came to the allegation that the Russian bank had a connection to the Trump organization through these internet connections that they were pretending were happening. They said it was a red herring. In fact, it turned out there was nothing. The FBI figured it out rather quickly. And they knew that going in. And in fact, there's email communications detailed in the indictment showing that they were discussing how to make the document they were going to give the general counsel of the FBI plausible on its face, so that at least initially someone could say, oh, there's something here, even though they all knew that in essence it was a hoax. And the indictment lays out how the Clinton campaign colluded on this, how Fusion GPS colluded on this. It looks like Hillary's other lawyer colluded on this. So the question is this going to be the last gasp of Durham or the beginning of something more by Durham? I don't know the answer to that. It would be a seemingly unusual to me to have all that material about what looks to be other criminal activity that isn't charged here and just leave it there for no future action. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, I'm going to call it like I see it. I, you know, if I were Sessman's defense attorney, I would say, look, you know, everyone knew he worked for the DNC. Everyone knows this firm worked for Hillary Clinton. So no lawyer worth his salt would have understood that Sussman was there for anything other than to advance Hillary Clinton's political agenda. So that's what I would be saying to a jury. But, you know, the allegations are what they are, that Baker thought he didn't understand it to be for Hillary Clinton. And so as a result, Durham says, the FBI handled the allegations differently than they might have otherwise handled them. It's, you know, it's obstruction of justice largely. You know, and it makes common sense. If you go to the FBI, and this is the bigger issue, is they had information that they knew or had likely reason to know was not accurate. And they pretended otherwise to the FBI and said they should seriously investigate it without telling them the political angle there. So that's going to be interesting. But as I said earlier, but as I've been saying, that the other issue is the FBI and the Justice Department's culpability here, which is kind of related to this, because the FBI had already been working with Christopher Steele, who was one of the people who was involved in trying to figure out what was going on here in terms of manufacturing this these allegations against President Trump or then candidate Trump. Judicial Watch uncovered that Christopher Steele was being paid by the FBI at the same time he was being paid by the Clinton campaign. It was a joint operation. And then later, even after they fired Christopher Steele as a source, they still gave him information. And the FBI told Christopher Steele, even though he was a leaker, they knew he was a leaker and they knew he was an agent of the Clinton campaign, that they were investigating Trump. And of course, that was leaked. The other interesting thing here is this is, you know, some folks have complained, well, he's a small fish. Sussman is not a small fish. Sussman is a big fish in a small pond of co-conspirators who were targeting Trump, including Hillary Clinton, I would allege. Because when you see the Twitter feed of Hillary Clinton around that time, people have noted, she was pushing this angle on Alpha Bank that everyone knew was a fraud and everyone around her knew was a fraud. So I don't know what Durham's going to do, but the conclusion one can draw from this is, according to the United States government, of which Durham is the representative, they've been doing this investigation forever and a day. They have found that the effort to tie Trump to Russia included false information knowingly given to the FBI under false pretenses, and it was criminal in nature. It was criminal in nature. As I've said it once, and I'll say it again, President Trump is a crime victim. And this indictment proves it. Is Durham going to do more? I don't know. He should. He should question Hillary Clinton before a grand jury. He should question Joe Biden, dare I say it, before a grand jury. And, of course, the head of the grand conspiracy, Barack Obama. So good news. I've been critical of John Durham. I didn't see any evidence of an investigation. But now I have evidence of an investigation, finally through an indictment. He was targeting and criminally investigating the Clinton campaign. And the Clinton's campaign top lawyer, one of two top lawyers, is now under federal indictment as part of his scheme in league with the Clinton campaign to lie to the FBI and smear Donald Trump. And, of course, the indictment also highlights how they were placing this material in the media. It looks like Sussman also went to the CIA. This is where the corruption is, in addition to whatever these folks were doing, is that they had allies and co-conspirators in the deep state. Why on earth would the CIA getting involved or talking to a political candidate's lawyer? But it shows you that it doesn't matter. Because it's Trump, they'll do whatever. And I'll just raise quickly here the issue of General Milley, where you have this Woodward story, Woodward book coming out, that says that Milley called the Chinese and to quite supposedly reassure them promised to give them a heads up if there was going to be an attack by the United States. A treacherous and dangerous thing. I mean, besides the treachery of it, you could have incentivized at that time, and thank God the Chinese didn't do anything, at least we know about, the Chinese to take a rash act because they thought they might have some time to get, you know, some time to protect themselves because they get a heads up from Milley. I mean, that's the definition of mutiny, of treachery. I don't know how else to describe it. And, of course, Joe Biden protects and defends Milley and says he has full confidence. So he supports the sedition and treachery targeting the office of the presidency. But because it's Trump, the rule of law doesn't mean anything. The Constitution doesn't apply, and anything goes. And because they said it was only about Trump, we were supposed to believe, oh, don't worry, it won't be anything worse than what they did to Trump. You know, it was only about Trump. It's not about us. And of course it's about us. Of course it's about us. Because now they're targeting through this 1-6 investigation, all Americans. You have this vaccine mandate, which is abusive of our rights as well. Social media monitoring, censorship, it's all about us. They're calling out the National Guard, making a scene about calling out the National Guard because there's going to be a First Amendment protected protest in town here in Washington, D.C. So what is Judicial Watch doing about it? As usual, we're already on it. With respect to Sussman and the meeting with Baker, we sued in 2018. They didn't even want to confirm whether the meeting existed or not. It's taking place one way or another. We had a federal court say, no, you have to proceed. They still fought us on releasing documents, and we've been getting documents. My understanding is the documents have been mostly redacted. They don't really show us anything substantive because the only thing the FBI and Justice Department has been willing to do is confirm the meeting took place, but have refused to turn over much of anything in substance. So we've already been in court, and now we know why they've hid the material, because it would have shown the lies and their collusion with the Clinton campaign here. Milley, you know, he had that phone call with Pelosi, which was also seditionist by on the part of both Pelosi and Milley, talking about the nuclear codes and Milley undermining his own chain of authority by answering to the Speaker of the House, who isn't part of the chain of authority. Really outrageous treachery, in my view, sedition, I would say. And so we've sued for those records. And everyone wants to know what's going on. Where's that phone call material? We want it. Woodward supposedly had something denoting what happened in the call. We're in court for it, and we're supposed to get the documents soon, within the next few weeks. So we'll see what we get, and we'll see what they withhold. So good news about the Durham investigation. He needs to do more. Better late than never. And remember, Trump is a crime victim. And he frankly continues to be victimized, because you kind of see this in New York with the targeting of his organization through petty and vindictive charges. Man, I get ticked about this stuff, you know. I don't, it's not just a game for me. It's not just a game for my colleagues at Judicial Watch. I know you get upset about it, and I get upset about it. And it's not because, I support a policy of one politician versus the other. It's the rule of law and the gamesmanship. You know, that's why even if someone, you know, these days, I'm willing to give Sussman the benefit of the doubt because I don't trust the Justice Department and the FBI.